Blog Talk Radio.
We've had the best football picks for a decade, and we ain't stopping now. Live from the IMLD home studios, in its 10th season, this is, in much less detail, the podcast, where we cut through the noise and give you your NFL breakdown in much less detail. Now your hosts, Jay and Dre. Are you recovered yet from whatever the heck that was last weekend? I still don't know what that was. I still have no words for it. 12 one-possession games last weekend tied the NFL record. And two of those games that weren't one-possession games, Denver won by, was it 21 points? Then they were up by they were down by a lot before Cincinnati was down a lot in Tampa before coming back and winning. Denver won by 9. They were not up 21. They only won by 9 possessions. That's a 2-possession victory by the slimmest of possible margin. It was an absolute bananas crazy weekend of football, and we're going to try to cover as much as we can. We're going to give out our awards, and we're going to figure out what in the world all that was before we make our picks for week 16. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays, everybody. We are here. We are live. We are in much less detail, the podcast, here with you on a Friday night, December the 23rd, 2022, before our big batch of Saturday games tomorrow on Christmas Eve, with three more on Christmas Day and one on Monday night. I'm Dre. He's Jay. We're here to figure whatever the heck that was. Jay, I guess you can say what that was better than I can, because you got four games on me last week, so you got a better judgment or viewpoint on whatever was going on in week 15 than I do. Uh-oh, I don't hear Jay. Oh, Jay, are you muted? I hit the button to put Jay on, like, right as the show was starting. Sometimes that's a problem. Try to mute him and get him back. See if that works.
Hello?
There you are. Now I can hear you.
Okay, that's... I know that, yeah, you must have gone, like, right into the studio about 5 seconds before the show started.
I was in the studio. I connected you, like, literally as the girl was counting down to when the show was starting. I didn't mean to do that.
That never works.
No.
I was about 2 seconds away from ending and trying to call back in, so.
Yeah, I'm glad I tried that mute and reconnect thing. So, thankfully, that worked. As I was saying, with all that big lead up, ooh, what a weekend.
It was a wild and wacky week. I wouldn't necessarily call it good football. it was entertaining, but yeah, I tend to draw the line with all of these comebacks and the sloppy play and the silly coaching and ref ball. It's definitely been a very odd season. I'm kind of sad that this is the first season that I've been able to watch as much football as I have, because it makes me wish I hadn't. It's been awful. The product on the field is not good. A lot of injuries, a lot of crazy outcomes. You know, I got four games on you last week. It means absolutely nothing. Because even the two I lost, I should have won.
Which
just tells you how crazy it is, because you have Atlanta do over on a 2-point conversion after they missed to give you a cover to go from 5-3, and then you have the Bears just getting complete busted coverage, a garbage time touchdown.
Yeah,
that meant nothing in the overall game, and then I get wild and wacky wins, and you know I get the Raiders and the Jags, and just ugh. What a Yeah, I mean, I guess it's fun. We're going to hand out the hardware, but it leaves me wanting quality football. That is the way I end up with it at the end of the day.
I mean, they can't all be, you know, Bill Walsh and excellent coach organizations. And, you know, there are a lot of teams that need a lot of work coaching-wise and
yes.
scheme-wise. You know, but they can't all be great. And that's kind of what's, you know, makes it fun is you got all these teams now scrambling for the bottom of the playoff pile and trying to get that last wild card spot. And they're all like very flawed teams, but somebody's
yes.
going to get in. And once you get in, you never know.
Yeah. We have the Jaguars now are the money favorite to win the division.
They're crazy.
It is. But hey, if they do, I'll look like a genius. Because I had the Jaguars in the playoffs.
That you did. And I laughed my ass off at you. And for the first three quarters of the season, it looked like a joke. And here come the Jaguars. Go figure.
Well, because all it takes is, you know, 8 wins, apparently.
Yeah. I
get
guess.
In. Unless you're the Bucks or whoever. No,
or anybody
the
in
South,
the NFC
You might
South.
Only need 6 or 7 to win that thing. Okay.
The Panthers are still alive for a home playoff game.
Yes.
The organization that quit on their team weeks ago can still possibly host a playoff game. It's been that kind of season, and there's 3 more weeks of it to go.
Yeah, well, so we'll have to see if we survive. Did that pull me even with you for the year? And what would be
sure
a wild?
Did.
How crazy of a year has this been? And here we are. We're 15 weeks in, dead heat.
So 5-10-1 for me with the Titans Chargers push, 9-6-1 for you. It's a crazy amount of pushes this year. That's 8 pushes on the season now, pulling us both at 108-108-8. Not only are you even with me, but we're both even on the year. We're both exactly at 500. I don't know what to
say
about that either.
It's the gold standard, right? It is the mark that we always strive for. To at least be 500 or higher, and we're 15 weeks into this nonsense, dead even. Dead even, both 500, 3 weeks to go. Man, race to the finish.
You continue your locks push because, again, you're going to win out in locks since you can't catch me there. That's a guarantee. So you come through on Monday night with the pack over the Rams. And my lock didn't go so well with the Bills on Saturday night, but I lamented that live as we were doing the show last Saturday.
You did. As you were putting together your 0-4 start to the week last week.
I guess I should be happy to win 5.
It's hard to recover. It's just hard to recover from that.
Very, very difficult. I did get to actually sit down and watch the Bills-Dolphins game because I wanted to see how the Dolphins did that, and I came out of it impressed by the Dolphins' effort. I'll talk about that as the show goes on. I actually sat down and watched that Vikings game because I had to see how the hell that developed and how that happened. I had to see that for myself with my own eyes, and I mean, I saw it. It happened. I still can't describe it or understand it, but it happened.
It was a thing. It happened.
No explanations for it. You, by virtue of beating me last week, get the distinction of trying to describe and figure out all of this stuff from last weekend first. So I ask you, Jay, the musical question thing to you about that week.
This was the award I probably struggled with the most. What was the best? There's a whole lot of bad. We'll get to that. But I looked for the good. And that's the whole point of this award. I looked for the good things that happened this week. And I'm actually going to give it to a team that we've been kind of handing the flowers to the last few weeks with the resurgence. They've taken over first place in their division. Go on the road, erase a big deficit, and basically erased Tommy. I'm giving it to the Cincinnati Bengals for that effort going down to Tampa, getting down 17-0 quick. And then just turning Tom Brady into a turnover machine. He throws 2 picks, he fumbles twice, and in the snap of a finger, that 17-0 deficit was completely wiped out. And then the Bengals just piled on some more and route to a 34-23 win on the road in Tampa in what looked like it was just going to be Tampa's day. They were getting everything they wanted early in that game, and then they get a strip sack of Tommy, and then it was like the route was on. It was like, wait a minute, I feel better. I'm impressed. For a Super Bowl loser to come out with the hangover, that Super Bowl loser's curse, and they kind of muddled along. And over the last few weeks, I mean, here they are, 10-4. That's not bad for a team that's kind of like finding their way. And, yeah, Bengals are a dangerous team here going into late December and January.
Yeah, good on them. In a different week, that would have been much more newsworthy and been talked about a lot more because it was
– That was very pedestrian.
Last week, it was completely a blip. Just nobody noticed it. Nobody cared. But, yeah, that's kind of significant to be up 17-0 on a team and wind up losing by multiple scores like that. And I made fun of you a little bit on this pick because I remember you said you were taking the Bengals over the Bucks because I'm going to take the better team. And
they're
I'm
good.
Like, well, yeah. That's kind of – You could do that every game, and if it was that easy, you know. So the better team, the Bengals, found themselves down 17-0 to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And then they woke up in the second half and said, wait a minute, we're the better team. And they just lambasted the Buccaneers and Tommy. There's only so much the Bucs D can do, you know, to combat the offense constantly coughing up the pig. Tommy was terrible, turning it over, fumbling, interceptions, the whole 9 yards. But give the Bengals credit for forcing that. And, yeah, I didn't have any awards for that game. So good for you for highlighting and spotlighting the Bengals and yeah, giving them their flowers. They're doing what we said they're doing what they did last year. They just kind of figured it out as the season went along and tried this and tried that and then said, okay, we got the magic formula. We're going to go and make our run now. And, hey, who knows? Maybe they're ready to make another run in the AFC when the playoffs come around.
Yeah, the AFC is definitely, as it has been most of the last several years, the much more loaded conference by a lot. And there's Cincinnati moving their way up now into what would be a 3 seed.
Yeah, it's right there. There's a lot of stuff right there for the taking with a whole lot of different teams. There's actually only one game this entire weekend, even including – Thursday, featuring two teams that are both completely eliminated from playoff contention. Every one of the other 15 games,
yeah,
at least one of the teams is still fighting for a playoff spot. It's wide open right now. It is completely wide open for whoever wants to get hot. And the Bengals are getting hot.
This is the excitement of the extended schedule, of the added playoff format. I mean, I'm just at that let's just get there point now.
Sure.
I
hear you.
Start so bad.
3 long weeks to go.
We've been done with some of these teams for so long that it's just like, let's go. Let's get to the playoffs. Can we just start right now? I like these matchups. Let's go. What was your best of that week?
I'm with you. There's a lot to comb through and try to figure out. Was that the best or was that just some dumb luck or what? I gave the flowers last week to the Detroit Lions offensive coordinator, Ben Johnson. So I'm going to do it again as the best of the week because you got to have some stones to keep calling these crazy-ass plays, and they keep working and they keep resulting in Ws. Get Ws however you can get them. And the Lions are just getting them, and they just keep winning. Brock Wright. The win?
51-yard touchdown.
Yeah, in that week? Yeah, what the hell? Why not?
Yeah, why not?
That makes so the New York Jets are up 17-13, 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter. 4th-and-1 for the Lions. Game on the line. You'd think they would man up and run it up the middle. You'd think they would throw something short to move the sticks. They're at their own 49-yard line. Nobody could have possibly seen Jared Goff to a no-name tight end who just dropped the ball right before that as well.
Yep.
Brock Wright, and I mean, he was wide open. Nobody had any idea that was coming. This was after Johnson called the Penei Sewell catch from last week with the offensive lineman in motion, which nobody saw that coming. Look, that's football, right? Do what the opposition doesn't think you're going to do. Put men in position where they're going to be uncovered or be all alone because the defense isn't expecting it. Expect the unexpected. And that's what the Lions are doing. And got to give Ben Johnson the credit and give him the flowers again, pulling out a victory right there where the Lions were in position to, if they get that fourth down and shut them down, they're going to put the Lions away. And, you know, Zach Wilson, he had some real good throws in that game. He had some terrible ones as well because he's Zach Wilson. Some of the shittiest throws you'll ever see. But he also had some real good ones.
It was I made reference to it in my pick for the game on Twitter on Thursday night. It was YOLO balls. That's all it was.
Well,
most of the big plays where he was getting them out there to get, he was just back legging it, just chucking it out there. And the Lions defense is so bad that a lot of those were able to convert, which was why I was so anti Jets on Thursday night. Like, no, wait, now Jags aren't going to give this up. But now I thought that they were going to, you know, sneak that one out over the Lions. So yeah, give the Lions a lot of credit for going on the road and especially to catch that defense napping. That Jets defense has been the only thing that they've had going for them on this run that they've been on. And the Lions, those guys find a way to go on the run. Yeah. One of the things we get with this extended season now is, boy, we get some of these teams just getting hot late.
And the Lions are heating up. Yep. You saw those Zach Wilson YOLO balls. So you have to admit that the ones that were good because he YOLO'd and threw it up for guys who are actually there in position. Because half of the YOLO balls in that Lions game and all the ones in this Jaguars game were YOLO balls for the other team, where nobody his team was in position to catch the ball. So at least he had some YOLO balls in this one that were actually intended for the actual intended receiver. So that's something. Then he completely devolved Thursday night, and now he's been benched again. So
yeah. Yeah, they melted down again and gets benched for some guy named Streveler. Robert Saleh said he wanted to highlight the running game. Okay.
That's what you say when you hate your quarterback. I want to highlight my running game now.
Nobody wants anything to do with Zach Wilson, apparently. So.
Not even his mother's friends right now. What was the worst thing out of all of that to you in Week 15?
I still can't decide what's worse. Is it the Colts blowing a 33-0 lead, or is it the Vikings losing 33-0 at halftime? Still don't know what's worse in that wild and crazy game. I think they're both equally bad. I think you got the best and the worst of both of those teams all in one. You know, it's like the microcosm of both seasons was that game. The Vikings, a lot of comebacks, a lot of close wins. I mean, they've got that +2 or +5, whatever point differential that they have now, which is just ridiculous. Still the worst point differential for an 11, even worse than that fraud Steelers team from a couple of seasons ago. That's how bad this Vikings team has been on the plus minus side. And then the Colts with Jeff Saturday, the Spectator, just looking around, man, just taking it all in. Soaking it
up. Is he
up.
Still in
loving
Minneapolis?
It.
Did they ever get him back in the plane?
I think
and
he's
get
just
him back
standing there, just arms folded, just nodding his head with a big grin on his face. Like, wow.
Game's
still
over,
can't
Jeff.
Believe I saw that.
Yep.
So, I still don't know what's worse. I don't know if it's worse that you blow the big lead or if you give up the 33 to that team, to the Colts. In kind of just ugly fashion, just so sloppy. I mean, it's like the Colts weren't really doing anything extra special, but you get a block punt, you get a pick six. It's just really ugly first half for the Vikings. And then the Vikings, I can't even say they flipped the switch. They just stopped screwing up. And the Colts are just bad.
That was a Murphy's Law situation for the Vikings in the first half. Like, you name it, and it fucked up on them.
Everything went against them in that first half. They get a defensive touchdown called off the board for completely BS reasons because they blew the play dead. That should have been a everything that you can think of that goes wrong for you in the first half went against the Vikings, which is why when I was watching that score, I was just like, man, something up with this game. I didn't think it was going to be that. I didn't think the Vikings were going to come all the way back, but I thought the Vikings were going to, score a lot.
They did.
I think they were scored 39 in the second half.
The Colts made some breaks. The Vikings gave some gifts, just a little bit of everything. Refs helped the cause. 33-0 at the half, 36-7 late in the third quarter. Like the probability, of course, mm-hmm. your favorite stat of 99.9999999% in favor of the Colts until it wasn't. Nothing changed until Kirk Cousins went away from Justin Jefferson, which is really stupid, but. He was just blanketed by Stephon Gilmore, so I found this out, watching the game replay and figuring out what happened. Oh, okay, he kept trying to force it to Justin, and it wasn't working out. Justin was making some catches, but a lot of them, Gilmore was just defending him and knocking him away and just playing some great man-to-man, one-on-one defense. So Cousins started looking elsewhere. Okay, KJ Osborne, you're wide open every time. I'm going to just keep throwing it to you. Eventually, Adam Thielen gets in on the fun. Scored a touchdown. Dalvin Cook screen for the tie. Just awesome run after the catch. Cook just speeding away from everybody.
God, you forget how fast Dalvin Cook is.
And when he turned on the afterburners, nobody was touching him. And to finish off the run or the catch by getting to the 10 or the 5-yard line, and the Colts caught up with him at that point, and he just muscled his way in anyway. He's like, fuck you. I'm going in anyway. I don't care. Is finishing off with the muscle, just beautiful running by Cook. And TJ Hockenson gets involved for the 2-point conversion. And yeah, I never seen anything like it. Nothing's ever happened like it. So that's why it was so unbelievable. I don't really know what else to say about it. It was unbelievable.
You get the Colts passing up a long field goal attempt that would have iced the game.
Sure.
And, as soon as they lined up and they went, you just had this feeling. Like, when you have that much momentum going your way, you almost feel unstoppable. But they still had that chance, and they passed up the field goal. Man, just Saturday. Don't think he's going to be retained.
Who knows? When it comes to Ursay, who knows?
He'll probably get a 7-year contract.
Who the hell knows? That was pretty bad. You referenced the worst a little bit in passing there to me, and it's the worst from last week for you. So now you hit the zebras, and this week I'm going to hit the zebras as well. Chandon Sullivan robbed twice. Bad enough to be robbed once of a defensive touch. He got robbed twice.
Yeah. Ref ball.
One time they blew the play dead before the fumble, and the other time I think they blew the play dead after the fumble, but because the whistles were blowing, they ruled that he couldn't have run it in for the touchdown because it was being blown dead. Why are you blowing the whistles? And the ball is clearly out before anyone comes near, before the runner comes anywhere near touching the ground. You don't see that. You used to see that a lot when we were younger, that they would – he's down. Blow the play dead. And I think that's kind of why instant replay came along. There was too many of those instances where they blew it dead and then they went to the replay and clearly the ball came out before the guy went down. So usually they don't do that because they don't want to take the chance of doing exactly what they did in that Vikings game, which is blowing the play dead that should still be going on and ruining and taking away a legitimate score by the defense. Poor kid got robbed twice. So that was incredible. Think about those of you that are spread players, and I didn't bet the spread in that particular game because it was such a low spread, as I talked about last week. I was just taking the money line. So the fact that the Vikings came back and won it at all was just stunning. But if you're a spread player, the Vikings get that touchdown and tie the game in regulation, even earlier. Now they have a chance to stop the Colts, get the ball back, and go down, get another touchdown because they had all the momentum going. It shouldn't have come that close. The Vikings probably should have completed that comeback without overtime even being a thing. And they had a chance to have that ball in regulation and maybe go in the end zone and come all the way back and cover that spread. Yeah, the Zebras completely screwed that up. And then even more awful Zebra decisions in Washington on Sunday night. That has been being talked about for all week long.
The Terry McLaurin play.
Man, how do you sit
you're good.
There and
you're good.
Tell the guy the he's good or seem like you tell the guy he's good, and then yeah. as soon as the ball is snapped, you throw the flag. Oh, you're not good. Sorry. Psych! Like, what is that? You're opening yourself up with something like that to possible corruption. Because it looks really, really bad on the optics. Again, you know, that's the ultimate NFL Films treasure trove. If you can actually get the real audio of what that referee was saying to Terry McLaurin as he's,
yeah.
you know, looking and trying to, because if he's actually telling him you're good and then throws a flag and saying, actually, now that I think about it, you're not good. Like, what the fuck is that? Well, how do you tell a guy he's good? We don't really know if he told him he's good. McLaurin apparently said that he told him you're good or indicated to him that you're good. And then he wasn't good. So it becomes an illegal formation penalty
yeah.
that takes away a Brian Robinson touchdown run as the Potato Skins are trying to lead a comeback against the Giants on Sunday night. And it wasn't over. Because what was being talked about maybe more than that after that is, holy cow, Darnay Holmes just molesting Curtis Samuel on that final throw on fourth
oh, yeah.
down in the end zone. Obvious pass interference. Samuel is just wearing this guy Holmes like a jacket on his back. And no call, no flag. That was the one that was really being discussed the next day on all the talk shows. So it was not a good weekend at all for the Zebras. And you talked about them last week. It was a bad week, and this week it was a bad week because, as I was saying, I hate criticizing the officials because it's such a difficult job. But when you are this egregious, and like I said, that one with McLaurin, that makes it look like there's something going on. You know, I don't know if there's something corrupt going on, but it sure makes it look like it when the referee is apparently indicating that the formation is fine, and then when the ball is snapped, he throws the flag and says, "Actually, no, it's not fine. That doesn't look good at all."
And it's even better because when we get farther down in the awards, I have another one that you missed.
Oh, there are more. Yeah,
the gift that keeps on giving, ref ball.
Oh boy, so yeah, not a good week for the Zebras.
Yeah. So and since we had briefly talked about the Vikings, I do have this in yeah. my notes here that I need to provide an apology.
Oh.
To Kevin O'Connell, the coach okay. of the Minnesota Vikings, because last week on the show I kept calling him Mike McDaniel,
and all these guys
are just so confusing to me. So,
they're all interchangeable.
My apologies to Kevin O'Connell. You are not Mike McDaniel, the coach of the Miami Dolphins. Back and I'm listening to the show, and I'm like, he's not. That's just a Miami coach. Oh, man. Hey, page 26 here, you know, retraction. I got it in.
Our apologies for misrepresenting the coach of the Minnesota yeah. Vikings last week repeatedly and calling him Mike McDaniel.
And for making myself look like a complete idiot.
This is age, man. We're talking about it. You know, I'm your elder. You got to respect
yep.
me for a couple
happy,
of weeks.
Yep. Hey, happy birthday.
thank you very much.
Enjoy your 2 weeks of, you know, being 47 before I am.
This is what age does. All these kids that are younger than us, they're all the same. Zach Taylor, Sean
yeah.
McVay, Kevin O'Connell, Mike McDaniel,
Daniel Hackett. Yeah, we're just going to have to blend all these guys into one name.
All these guys that are,
you know,
10 years younger than us and they're head coaches in the NFL. Good
yeah.
God.
Kevin McHackett.
yeah.
Can't tell
Same
any
guys.
Of these guys apart.
Yeah. All right, we'll move on from there. The smartest thing to you about week 15.
Just to show you how screwed up last week was and that I am not anti-anybody, even though I seem to be on this show, I'm actually giving my smartest of the week to the Denver Broncos.
What?
Because look what happens when you focus on running the football and letting your defense get to work. Oh, yeah. My God, you blow the doors off a team you're supposed to blow the doors off of. It's shocking.
Yeah, Colt McCoy, dumplings for Arizona. Trace McSorley was not the answer.
Yeah, Trace McSorley was, no, the answer was not, whatever the question is, the answer is not Trace McSorley. No, hell of a day. Latavius Murray, and Brett Rypien goes out there and game manages just like he should, doesn't do anything really stupid, but also doesn't do what they were doing to poor Russell Wilson through the majority of this terrible run and making him throw the ball 50 times for 210 yards. It probably looked like it should have for a team that's predicated on defense. They ran the ball, own time of possession, just completely smothered Arizona, albeit a bad team. These are both bad teams. But
yes.
There's your blueprint, Denver. That's how you do it. Good on you, smartest of the week. Probably by accident, Denver Broncos.
Couldn't help it. You had to slip in a backhanded compliment.
Yes.
Couldn't get away with it. Do you really think they would have Russell Wilson throwing 50 times if they knew it was going to result in 210 yards? They didn't know it was going to be that bad. They were
but
just
that's
like,
what
come
they were
on.
Doing.
I know.
Once you see how bad it is, don't keep doing it.
Well, so when do you change up? After 3 weeks of it? 5 weeks? 7 weeks? I don't know.
When you decide that $240 million is not a lot, not a good investment. That's what it was. I think that's what it is. They're playing to the contract. How many times have we seen that?
They're going to continue to. He's there for the next 7 years. It's not like they're going to cut him.
Man.
They're
not going to cut him.
They're going to go right back to it.
Yeah. Just do it the Peyton Manning way. Peyton Manning knew his skills were in decline and adjusted his game to that. They need to figure this out because that's a team that's predicated on defense, and I hope they load up on O-line and running the football, because you can go out there and win with Brett. They would have lost this game if Russell Wilson was quarterbacking.
Perhaps, but God, he is. I hope he's not at that level yet. Peyton at the end, if Russell Wilson is at that level and they got 7 more years of that, good grief. I don't remember the
Broncos
quite
fans leaving the stadium on Peyton.
Maybe they should have, because it was uglier than what uh-huh. Russell Wilson's been doing this year. That you remember that Peyton Manning last season? It was terrible. It was worse than this, I think. Good on you for actually giving some credit to the coach that you've wanted fired for the last 3 months. So very, very good.
Yeah, I figure I don't have much more time to give them awards, so I might as well do it now.
There you go. All right. For my smartest of the week, it's going to be I'm just choosing one sort of random play out of all the craziness of week 15, but it was a play. It was something I don't think I've ever seen before. And if it wasn't practiced, if it was improvised, that's even more awesome, because it was just tremendous intelligence and athleticism out of nowhere. And if it was practiced, then that's awesome, because that means you are working on game situations, and it actually came through, and it was something that you were able to put to good use. So there was a play in the Titans-Chargers game, which I don't know if you saw this highlight or not, but the Titans got an interception on Justin Herbert at one point in that game. And it wasn't just a guy catching an interception on Justin Herbert. It was a tremendous out-of-bounds catch and touch pass situation back inbounds. Roger McCreary went up in the end zone. Herbert's trying to throw a touchdown, and the throw is towards the out-of-bounds sideline area. And McCreary actually goes up out-of-bounds to catch the ball, knowing he would come down out-of-bounds. He touch passes it before he comes down to Joshua Kalu, another cornerback for the Titans, who's standing in the end zone, who does the toe-drag swag, and actually converts the INT on a touch from Roger McCreary. It was incredible. The highest AWR rating you could come up with for both of those guys to be aware of the situation of where you are on the field to pull that off. Roger McCreary to Joshua Kalu, just an incredible INT for the Titans.
All I know is those two guys better immediately be made the gunners for the punt team, because that's the punter's dream, right?
That's right. Bat that thing back in and
save it. That's the play. The guy dives, you know, jumps into the end zone and then tap. That's what it reminded me of. It really did. It reminded me of that, of all those great special teams plays where the guy jumps, you know, risks it all, jumps into the end zone for that bouncing ball and then throws it to the guy who's literally, who catches it. Like it's, and you can always see the guy catch it the same way. Like he cradles it into his stomach and his tippy toes are about one inch short of the end line.
Trying like hell to stop his momentum from going into the end zone with the ball. Yeah.
Yeah. Holding it like a baby. That's great. And that definitely would fall under that high AWR. That's your Madden rating right there.
Man, 99 for both of those guys on that. Whew. Strange ass game besides that, Titans and Chargers.
It was.
Because neither quarterback had any protection. They're both running for their fucking lives. They just kept swapping punts and bad throws due to the bad protection, due to the pressure. Tanny messed up his ankle again, but Malik Willis in for a series was such a disaster. They taped Tanny back up and said, all right, get back out there. We can't do this.
No. It doesn't matter how hurt you are.
Yeah,
you're going back out there. And now it looks like he's donezo, so we'll see.
Yeah. Now they're going to have to go with Malik Willis whether they want to or not. So, yeah, all the reports indicate that Tannehill might be done for the rest of the season. But this one, you thought this was a Tennessee setup. You thought this was, hey, this is where the Titans get back and smash because
it was
they
right
got the
there.
Terrible Chargers defense.
It was right there.
But, yeah, they're just so off kilter. They couldn't do it. And then Herbert, even in a down performance, he was not his best, and he still goes for 312 and found his guys to set up, you know, Dickert, a kicker for the game-winning field goal. So, yeah, that wound up being a push. But, yeah, that was just a weird game to watch.
It was a hard-fought push for us.
It really was. So the dumbest of all the things that happened in Week 15 for you. Oh, what a
list. You know what's coming.
It's
not just one thing here. I'm actually going to give this, and you can play the Benny Hill music if you like. Because I am giving this to the entire end of that Raiders-Patriots game. I'm even going before the whatever busted lateral, interception lateral, where...
The fumble recovery, technically.
Where Chandler Jones puts Mac Jones into his grave on his way into the end zone. But before that, which is why I'm shocked you missed this one, we get some ref ball because the game should have never even been tied because Derek Carr throws a quote-unquote touchdown pass to Keelan Cole, clearly steps out of bounds. Second foot, clearly on the stripe, but... It was three crazy, you know, Zapruder film angles. Like, did they send the – they must have sent the B camera crew to this game because there was not one clear shot. But on one of the shots, there's the stripe, and there's Keelan Cole's tippy toe, and, you know, he's out of bounds. I got the win on this one. It was so cheap. So that ties the game. And then
I want to interrupt briefly. I saw one angle that one of the recap highlight shows showed.
Okay.
They showed some black stuff getting kicked up when that second foot came down. The end zone is black there in Vegas for the Raiders logo. And it was that bad. It was Zapruder film levels where they had to zoom in on the second foot. And they showed some black pebbles being kicked up, whereas if he were out of bounds, the white pebbles would have kicked up.
Oh,
and therefore, that's why they
know.
Said it was.
Little ref ball going on there. But they called it a touchdown on the field.
Right.
So
can't overturn it.
This is one of those. If they had called that incomplete, they're not overturning.
They probably aren't overturning that either, yeah.
So a little bit of ref ball there. But then you get the sequence where Mac Jones hands off to Ramondre Stevenson. You can fault Jacoby Myers for the intercepted lateral, but first of all, what's Ramondre Stevenson doing?
He was fine. He was running along just fine.
He's about to get tackled out of bounds and decides that he's going to jump past the ball back to Jacoby Myers, who I think at that moment his brain broke because what he's now in the hype, right? Oh, now it's lateral time. And Jacoby Myers throws a beautiful ball back across to the middle of the field, except for the problem is Mac Jones is being guarded by Chandler Jones, who just grabs that right out of midair. And like I said, that puts Mac Jones into his grave. That's the cover of their DVD for the end of the season, by the way. Right there. If the Patriots don't make the playoffs, that right there is the cover of the DVD. And then Chandler Jones barrels that thing into the end zone. And, I mean, that's one of the wildest cover wins I've ever had in our 20-plus years of doing this. And I watched it happen live, and I still can't believe I saw that.
I can't believe it either. The fact that that came on the next day after whatever the fuck that was in Minneapolis,
right?
That comeback. It's like, what is going on here? Like, the entire world is falling off its axis. Like, what is happening? You know the award I'm going to give it, so I'll save it for later. But it's not my dumbest. Believe it or not, that's not my dumbest.
Uh-oh. Something was dumber than that?
You kind of said, Jacoby Myers, that wasn't so much, that was just a panicked brain fart. That was just, why is the ball in my hand now? What are we doing?
I still think that's Ramondre Stevenson's fault.
Sure. Yeah, because he should have went down. He should have went down himself.
Right.
There's no reason. No reason to do that. No, you're absolutely right. So that's why I'm not giving Jacoby Myers my dumbest, because, like you said, it was kind of, you know, hype mode, like, okay, here we go. The Stanford band is on the field. Let's get it. So I'm not going to give it to him.
Did you hear the call? Did you actually hear the Ron Santo call of that?
I'll get to all of that in a second. We got a lot of recap there, folks.
When Mac Jones gets pushed into his grave, all of a sudden you hear the announcer pull, oh, no!
Believe me, we'll get to all of that.
Okay.
But for my dumbest little, I think somebody on the Steelers was actually dumber last week than Jacoby Myers. I know. Steelers linebacker, special teamer, Marcus Allen, ironically, yes, his name is actually Marcus Allen. So 4th and 27, it didn't affect the game. That's why I didn't. I'm sure you didn't even hear about this happening.
Oh, you know, and I watched a lot of football last week, and this did not register at all.
Panthers had a 4th and 27 situation against the Steelers.
Where's Freddie Mitchell?
He was apparently not involved. He was at home telling his hands that they're so great. Carolina is getting ready to punt the ball because there is no such thing as a play to convert 4th and 27. Except Steelers linebacker Marcus Allen decided this was a good time for him to walk into the Panthers huddle while they're getting ready to punt on 4th and 27. Which is an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty,
and
an automatic first down. Eventually they got a field goal on the drive. It doesn't make a ripple in week 15. It does not make any kind of impact in the craziness that was this weekend. But that is dumb as it gets. What the hell is wrong with you, man? 4th and 27, you're going to go over there and basically taunt them and stand there in the huddle as if you're part of the team and pick up a special. I guarantee you this dumb motherfucker doesn't even know that that was a rule or that was a penalty.
Not like he's that poor kid from the Bears last year who just looked over at the Steelers sideline and got the penalty that
got
lost
a taunting penalty for standing there and looking at the Steelers sideline.
When you got the Rasheed treatment, you don't go into the other team's huddle and taunt them on 4th and 27. What are you doing?
That is as stupid as you could possibly get. I mean,
that's a Bengals move. That's like a Vontaze Burfict, you know, that team.
Yeah, no, a Bengals move would have been if he would have went over to the huddle and decked somebody. That's the Bengals move.
Picked up the guy, gives him the backbreaker.
Yeah, give him the pile driver right there and paralyze him. That would have been a Bengals
move. That would have been the Bengals.
That was another weird game. Steelers had a near 12-minute touchdown drive at one point. Yeah. That's the epitome of ball control offense right there by Mitch Trubisky. So good job on him to try to win the game the best way he could know how.
Both on the wrong side of that one.
Yeah, yeah. Again, not making a ripple in this crazy weekend, but I thought that deserved the dumbest because that was just stupid. So the biggest surprise out of all that in week 15 to you.
I don't want to belabor it too much because they lost again. But the Houston Texans, man, they're just full of fight. They clearly haven't gotten the memo. They did get the memo because they're still losing all of these games.
Right.
But they're showing up. And you know, they're not just getting steamrolled. And this is, once again, we talked about it, how bad was it to pick against the Texans again. And here we both are, picking against the Texans. They show up after they should have beaten the Cowboys, probably should have beaten the Chiefs. And I was surprised.
Worse than that, we both knew Kansas City was not going to take Houston seriously and took Houston anyway.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't call it a trap, but that's what we did.
We knew it.
We walked right
into
that one.
Anyway.
We gave,
right
we
into
gave
it.
To that shit.
Yeah.
And Houston almost won that game, too. After almost winning a 17.5-point favorites or dogs against the Cowboys. So, we deserved that loss. We wear that L with pride because Houston just keeps shoving it right up our asses.
The Chiefs are kind of scuffling as far as the point spread. Their place kicker Harrison Butker is scuffling around. Didn't get much struggling, but they're scuffling right now. That's for sure. But not scuffling like the general, old General Mills, whose overtime fumble led to the Jerick McKinnon touchdown run. So they're not scuffling quite like him. The fact that they put up fight, that team was so bad and looked like they completely quit, and now they've reeled off a few outings in a row that they actually look like they have some fight. But I still can't tell because I didn't watch any of the Chiefs game. I watched all of the Cowboys games. I was sitting there with my wife's uncle watching, and I couldn't believe that. I still can't determine if this is – the Houston Texans have fight or if this is the teams that they're playing against don't respect them at all. I still can't determine that.
Yes,
it might just
be
they're not trying. It might just be all their opponents don't think they have to try because it's the Houston Texans. And that's why, because I don't think the Texans are doing anything like mind blowing or, you know, I don't think they're playing this improved level of football all of a sudden. I think the other team just doesn't care.
It can be both.
It can.
You play – how many times do we see, especially the Chiefs, who, like, how did we not take Houston?
Yeah.
Because no team plays down to the level of their competition more than the Chiefs. We talk about this with the
Only
Bills.
The Bills.
The Chiefs were doing this before it was cool.
The Chiefs
have been
were
doing
taking
this
opponents
for Patrick
before the Bills
entire
ever.
Career. What?
Yeah. The Chiefs are taking the opponents lightly before the Bills ever got good enough to do that.
Right. I mean, this is the Chiefs' move, is show up, play like crap, hang around, and then, we're the Kansas City Chiefs. And then they go and they win the game in the fourth quarter or overtime. And so this is their move. So we give the Bills crap for this all the time, but nobody was doing this better and faster and sooner than the Chiefs and Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes.
So, we shouldn't have been surprised, I suppose. My surprise was we shouldn't be surprised by this, but I had no idea the Fish were going to play that well in the cold. I kudos to Tua and the Miami Dolphins for throwing the ball somewhere other than down the hashes. They actually made the adjustments and figured – there were several factors. I got to watch that game earlier this week. There are several factors where why the Dolphins cost me money covering the spread against the Buffalo Bills on Saturday night. It was Tua throwing the ball in places that the Bills were not defending instead of just going right where everyone knew he wanted to go, which is down the middle. They hung with Buffalo in the cold, and it was a little snow in the fourth quarter. The snow came, but the first three quarters it was pretty much clear and pristine. But yeah, the Dolphins came in. They were clearly determined to play hard and show the Bills that win was not a fluke in Miami, even though it was. But the Dolphins fought. They showed up. Tua showed growth as a quarterback. It reminded me a little bit of Colin Kaepernick once Jim Harbaugh came in there and started coaching him up, and you saw the growth from week to week, the much better quarterback play. So this week showed a lot of growth to me. He actually made plays and made throws outside of the hashes, made throws where receivers were getting open, not just where he hoped that they would break to get open. And that's a big difference. That's we hadn't seen that. We had not been seeing that consistently from Tua, but we saw it in that Buffalo game. And also the Bills didn't want to tackle. You know, we talk about these cold games, and you can tell which teams, you know, want to be out there and which ones didn't. As much as I hate to say it, because I respect the Bills so much, and I think they're the best team in football when they put their minds to it. But part of the game, it seemed like they didn't want to be out there in the cold. Like, they didn't want to hit Raheem Mostert. Like, they were just kind of backing off at different points. Like, okay, the business decision. He's got a head of steam. I'm going to let him go. Hopefully the guy behind me gets him. Oh, there's nobody behind me. Oh, well he's just going to go. Salvon Ahmed with a touchdown run. They didn't want to tackle these guys. These guys are running hard, and the Bills just did not want to play with them. And every time the Bills offense would do something, Miami would answer back. Either Tua would make a great throw, or these guys would run and hit the Bills in the mouth, and they didn't have too much of a fight back until the snow came and sort of took the juice out of the Dolphins. But, you know, Tre'Davious White got burnt a few times on some of those nice throws by Tua and nice routes by Jalen Waddle. He was Tre'Davious is not all the way back yet. He's a great cornerback, obviously, when he's 100%, but he's not quite there yet, because he was getting burnt up a little bit by Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. So a lot of factors went into it, but I was definitely blown away and surprised that the Dolphins hung around with the Bills as long as they did.
Yeah, we both took the L on that one too.
Yeah,
we both thought Buffalo was going to exact that revenge and just kind of blow the doors off Miami and assert their dominance over the division, put their foot on their throats and just claim the title. They did eventually, but they worked for it. They earned it. I actually prefer Buffalo wins that look like that.
Develop some character in them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not always going to be easy. And then you think about a couple of those wins, like that win against the Chiefs, the win against, you know, that it goes a long way towards building that January resume.
All right. You're the one that picked the Bills to go all the way, so I'll defer to you in that observation of taking a tough win like that. I agree that it could build character, but I was still stunned. Like, Miami was leading that game in the second half. Like, they could have put that thing away,
chunks.
Actually.
Yeah. For some chunks. But, hey, get Bill still won.
It is. So your biggest letdown of Week 15.
We talked a little bit about the game already. Boy, you know what really let me down? Your Titans let me down. What a waste of a – they get the big game from Derrick Henry. They got a very gutsy effort from their defense, and Tanny bust up the ankle. They have to go to Malik Wills for a while. And it just never quite was there. Even when Tanny came back, Tanny without mobility. I don't know what is a comp for Tanny without mobility? Is that like he's like Andy Dalton if it's Tanny without mobility? I mean, it's bad. And that offense had no get up and go at all once Tannehill was just gonna be standing there, and the Chargers started to feast on him. I mean, it was kind of lucky that game pushed, because they did get that late last touchdown drive. To Derrick Henry when he punched it in, they were getting Henry a little bit more involved in the passing game. So I really thought this was a spot for the Titans. And I think if Tanny stayed upright and healthy for the whole game, they might have had it. But boy, why it's a letdown is Tennessee, who's usually a pretty strong team and can make a push or at least show up or be competitive and have a good game. And deserves a lot of years to get to the playoffs. They might be on their couches if they don't get their act together here soon.
They are not finishing strong. That's for sure.
No, they're about to get run down by the Jacksonville Jaguars. That last game, as long as the Jags stay within a game, that last game is Jags-Titans. That will be your final game of the season. That'll be about the only your Week 18 finisher. I've got a feeling right now is going to be Jags-Titans.
Wow. Who would have possibly thought that a month ago? Go figure. Tannehill without mobility might be Zach Wilson because he'll make a few throws in a row that are fine, and then he'll make a few throws where you go, what the hell did you just do that for?
Man, yeah, that let me down. That didn't just let me down. I mean, we pushed on the pick. It wasn't even so much from the pick standpoint. It was that you really felt like, you know, they really – had the right script. They did do a good job for most of the game of sort of stymieing that Chargers offense, even though Herbert did get the stats. They were doing a really good job of keeping them out of the end zone, kind of frustrating them. And they were pounding it with Henry, keeping control of the clock, playing Titan football, winning ugly. But as soon as Teddy went down and I saw that Teddy was out and Malik Willis was coming in, I figured that was just, I was eating the L already, so I feel very lucky to have taken a push on that one.
No, they saw one series and said, oh, fuck this shit. Tanny, get back in there.
Yeah, rub some dirt on it.
No, it's a letdown for both of us in the sense that we both hate seeing well-coached, talented teams not perform to the best of their abilities for whatever reason, whether it's ineffectiveness or injury or whatever the case may be. It is disappointing to see the Titans coming up limp the way they are right now. My letdown of the week, time to get mean-spirited. This is usually your foray, but I'm going to go off script a little bit. I'm going to go off the field here. Franco Harris let everybody down, man. They got all this build-up for this 50th anniversary of the Immaculate Reception. They're doing interviews with Franco. They're up there in Pittsburgh. They got the damn schedule built around them. I read this. I figured it, but I didn't know for sure, but I just read it recently, like yesterday, that they actually did start the schedule-making process for this season. They put this as the tent pole and built around it. Because the 50th anniversary of the Immaculate Reception, the game was Raiders versus Steelers, and the 50th anniversary of that actual game was either yesterday or today, I can't remember, but it was this weekend, and this weekend, coming up tomorrow night, Christmas Eve night, Steelers-Raiders, they built everything around this game, around this incident, around this controversial play, because at the time the rules were such, of course, that some Raiders fans will still argue that it should have never been a completed catch. I guess if the ball hit the offensive player first and then deflected to another offensive player, that was illegal at the time. And there's an argument over did it actually hit the first receiver or did it hit the defender, Jack Tatum, and then deflect into Franco Harris's hand. So it's controversial. It's one of the most memorable plays of all time. Should have counted. There may not be enough camera angles to say if Franco Harris actually caught the ball off the turf. It may have hit the ground. They didn't have, 60 cameras back then.
Right.
So there's a lot of talk around this play, but they were going to commemorate it. And they're going to retire Franco Harris's number at this game tomorrow night. And everything was set up for Franco Harris to get all his love and everybody to give Franco Harris all the flowers and talk. And he didn't feel like being around for it. He kicks the bucket Tuesday night. He messed everything up. Franco, what are you doing, man? Come on. You know what he pulled? You remember when Betty White passed? He pulled a Betty White. Everything was built around Betty White's 100th birthday. They had all these specials lined up. They had Parade Magazine had an article on Betty White and quoting her. But, magazine, this is part of why magazines and newspapers are dying. You don't set up an article about someone's 100th birthday like the week before. This takes weeks and months of planning. I still get the Sunday newspaper, so I know about this. Parade Magazine had had an article about Betty White in her 100th birthday, and they were quoting her, and they were talking about how great it was that she made it to 100. One small problem with that, she didn't actually make it to 100. She kicked like a few days before she made it to 100, and Franco Harris goes ahead and kicks the bucket a few days before they can get to the Immaculate Reception. Franco, you left the whole city of Pittsburgh. I don't really respect Franco Harris very much because he's one of those Penn State truthers that defended Joe Paterno, you know, through everything that he was doing and letting child rapists coach on his staff and all that. He's one of those guys. So I don't really have anything as far as any love for Franco Harris. But, man, come on, Franco. They were building everything around you, buddy, and you just decided to check out. That sucks, man. That's very inconsiderate of you.
Yeah. No, that definitely is a letdown because they had it all set up. So
yeah.
Maybe they can wheel out the wireframe statue.
For Franco.
For Franco.
Yeah, put the jersey on the wireframe and have the ball.
They were they were doing it all, right? I mean, Hall of Fame or Wall of Fame. Yeah, they were doing the whole shebang. Now it will be posthumously.
Right. And now we're going to have his crying family on the field as he gets his number retired and they play the Immaculate Reception, which may not have actually been a reception, but we'll never actually know.
Right. Yeah, because the way that even every time you see the highlight, the way it's all spliced up, you still don't know what to make of it.
Nope. 50 years later, still don't quite know exactly.
It was ref ball. Are you telling me it was ref ball in 72?
Maybe.
Okay.
There was no instant replays, so we'll never know.
Oh, man. Yeah, I was even
struggling.
Oh, I'll tell you who's struggling. Thank you for playing that. I'm going to give you a stat line here.
Uh-oh.
13 of 26, 497 yards.
Ooh.
Welcome to the NFL, Desmond Ridder.
Yeah.
Struggling. Oh, that was a hard watch. And I know the Falcons covered that number, got you one of your wins for the week over me. So good for you. But that is just a hideous stat line.
Yeah.
That was supposed to be the spark.
That spark didn't take off. It's flamed out.
Yeah.
That's
rough.
And we used our each other's logic to success there because I took Atlanta to cover that despite Desmond Ridder's first start. Because,
yeah.
As you said, Falcons and Saints, they always play to a field goal.
They are destined to battle to a three-point game forever. And you used my logic, and it was the correct logic. So I was still right.
Yeah. But that kid, Ridder didn't know which way to throw the football. He was so turned around and confused. Ooh, it was that was pretty bad. That rivaled Bryce Perkins as far as bad quarterback performances this year. That was not good.
Yeah, and both covered.
Technically,
I guess. So who gets your struggling?
That whole cover situation, man. Oh, that might get a postseason honors and dishonors for one of us for all of that.
Struggling.
Is Jeff Saturday still standing on the sideline at U.S. Bank? Jeff, here's the thing. I know we talked about the game, but look, think about it. Think about this. We thought the Dallas Cowboys taking the fourth quarter of that game against the Colts 33-0 in week 13, we thought that was an all-time collapse.
That, right?
Think of that.
Oh, yeah? Watch this.
Oh, my dear. Watch it. We thought that was an all-time indictment of the whole concept of Jeff Saturday being a head coach in the NFL. We were making fun of him standing there during that and looking around going, wow, what's going on out there? This is awesome. I'm sitting here in a NFL stadium, and I'm a head coach. Is the world burning down around him, and he has no idea. Then this happened. Oh, my God. Jeff, dude. Do something, anything, to stop this momentum. The worst loss lead ever. 33.
Ever.
That 33 number, I guess he's not a big fan of Scottie Pippen or Boomer Wells or any of the other 33s. It's 33-0 Cowboys in the fourth quarter, and now 33-0 the Colts were leading the Vikings, and they wind up losing this game. You can't be struggling more than Jeff Saturday because his head's got to be spinning now. He's got to be sitting there going, I got in this for this? This is why I decided to take this? Oh, my God. Dude.
But he's going to Nick Foles. He's going to solve everything.
That answers everything. It was all Matt Ryan's fault why this happened. It's all him. So now we're going to change quarterbacks and go to Nick Foles, and that'll solve everything. Yeah.
All right. Wouldn't you go to Nick Foles midway through that collapse?
No, because this wasn't Matt Ryan's fault. Matt Ryan did not lose that 33-0 lead. I'm telling you.
That's part of it too. No, I mean that the Matt Ryan no, wasn't out there giving
fault.
Up 30s, just giving up the booty to Kasim Osgood or whoever the hell it was.
KJ Osborne.
KJ Osborne. I've got my Buster receivers mixed up. I believe Kasim Osgood plays for the Lions.
The other KO, yes. So after all of that,
game 72-71.
Man, you want to know? We joke about Hall of Fames, right? Well, what's one step removed from the idiocy of Hall of Fames?
Pro Bowls.
Pro Bowls. So the fans get to vote for who goes to the Pro Bowl. Do you know who got the most votes for the Pro Bowl this year from the fans?
Was it Tua that I
It was Tua. Do you
okay.
know who's not going to the Pro Bowl this year? Tua.
What?
What the? Yeah.
Huh?
So Tua got the most votes and didn't get voted to the Pro Bowl.
What? Okay, I'm legitimately, like, how did that
Correct.
Work?
What? I don't know. And so basically, your fan vote is meaningless.
Oh.
So that's what we just found out.
Okay.
So Tua gets the most fan votes for the Pro Bowl, doesn't make the Pro Bowl.
But was that okay. Wow.
So, yes. That to me, I mean, you can talk about the other snubs, too, because there were some other, like Christian McCaffrey and some of these other guys. But, no, the number one vote getter from the fans didn't make the Pro Bowl.
Why are they taking a fan vote if they're ignoring the fan vote?
Correct.
Wow.
It's like real vote. It's like real elections.
Why are you getting real elections when you're just going to put in the guys you want anyway?
Right. Exactly. So good job, Tua. You won the points championship.
The NFL has just turned into a political party, basically. Okay.
So
awesome.
Good job. That when I saw that, immediately, what the fuck?
That's pretty bad. That part I was not aware of. I don't know how I saw that Tua won the fan vote, but then I did not see that Tua did not actually make the Pro Bowl.
Correct. Tua didn't make the team, even though he won the vote.
I missed that one. I completely. That one went right over my head. Okay.
Well, yeah, because you see the first part and go, oh, great, good for Tua.
Well,
he made the Pro Bowl. No.
He got the most votes.
No. Nice try.
Nope. Totally missed that. I got to admit.
We're going to go to Kinko's and get you the Drew Brees thing that says you got the most votes, but you're not going to the Pro Bowl. Now, somebody else will probably back out, and he'll probably, you know, he'll get
sure.
in somehow. But, but he did actually not make the official top-tier, you know, first ballot Pro Bowl team, even though he got the most votes.
I don't know if there's going to be too many guys backing out now that you don't actually have to go down and play
well,
the game.
Yeah, now
game.
That it's
like,
flag
just...
football. No, since Tua still get concussed.
Oh, see.
What?
I wasn't going there. That's why they didn't. Right,
you know, repping for Coolio.
That's why they didn't want to put him on the team. They didn't want to see him throwing up gang signs again. Yeah, that's why they did it.
So, yeah, that
him.
Was pretty cold. That's pretty cold, if you ask me.
So that went right over my head. Speaking of over your head, that ball just went over everybody's head in Vegas except for Chandler Jones' head.
Oh,
and fell right. So I got to revisit that. You were asking me about a certain radio call, ladies and gentlemen.
Which one?
The
stupidest team in football one? The Patriots call was like, this is the dumbest team I've ever seen call. That one's great. The TV call with the dude going, oh, no! That's classic.
The TV call, I heard that one, too, with the guy's voice cracking and he couldn't believe what was going on. Yeah, I heard that. But no, the Patriots radio call of that Pats Raiders ending was so delicious and so awesome.
Yes.
That I had to go back and get that. I'm not giving out any credits. I don't know which station this is because we're not important enough.
This
Nobody's
is
gonna
Patriots Radio.
It. Yes, the Patriots Radio.
W something.
WPAT or not.
When the Finns ran the hook and lateral to beat the Patriots several years ago.
Now on a 3rd and 10, 3 seconds left. Jones will give it to Stevenson. He started right. He runs it up the middle, hit by Chandler. Jones slips and hit across the 45 with a stiff arm. Off the tackle at the 40. He lost the football. And Jacoby Myers picks it up. He circles back and he throws it to glass. The field goal.
Oh, my
Jones
God.
Is picked up by Chandler Jones. He breaks away to the 30. He runs to the 20. He runs to the 10. He runs to the end zone. Unreal. Touchdown.
Come on.
Raiders.
Good night. This might be one of the dumbest teams I've ever seen.
And a victory for Las Vegas.
I don't know what to say.
In a weekend of WTF.
Yeah. The game, 72-71.
That is the all-time what the fuck.
Yeah.
That's all you can say. That's all you can say.
That is, you know, that's one of the worst plays of all time. I mean, we've seen some bad ones. You can't lose a game that way. You just can't. We've seen teams that are losing do that and have some, because they're trying to win, right? It's the last play of the game, and they have we have to win. No, this is a tied game. You're going to go into overtime, and that's what you come up with. I like how he goes, he lost the football. Yeah, because he lateraled it to Jacoby Myers.
Because he couldn't imagine the concept of being tied and deciding to go through the lateral stuff and starting the Stanford band and on the field stuff.
I couldn't imagine. I saw that. I still can't believe it.
None of us can believe what we just saw.
For the hands on Chandler Jones, and then the wherewithal to just bury Mac Jones, you know, kind of half-ass attempted to try to tackle him. But
it's a quarterback trying to tackle Chandler Jones. Come on.
Yeah. Well, all you got to do is trip him up.
Oh, okay.
At that point, just leg whip him or do something.
Mac Jones is probably suffering the same surprise and shock that everybody else was suffering. Like, what? Why is this ball coming this way? And what's going on?
Yeah.
I don't blame Mac Jones at all for screwing up that tackle, because he shouldn't have never been in that position.
I didn't have an award for it, but you see Vince Wilfork, he's had enough of Mac Jones's antics.
Oh, really?
Oh yeah, all of his histrionics, you know, all the.
Trying to be Tom Brady, trying to
scream
and rant and rave.
Vince Wilfork is not having it. He's
telling
him to like sit down, shut up, stop losing your shit. Basically, is what he's telling him. So, little cracks there too.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people feel that way, but I'm sure everyone feels like that about Brady, except Brady keeps winning, so you can't really tell him that.
Well, yeah, Brady's kind of earned it.
Right.
Brady wasn't doing that in his second season either.
No.
He was winning the Super Bowl in his second season. what did we miss?
I wanted to point out that as far as that play goes, you say we've all-time terrible play. Here's a play that we don't ever talk about because it happened before our time. Wrong way Marshall of the Vikings. Somebody compared it to that. Like, oh, wow, I remember that. Because we don't ever think about it, but
you
never see something like
that.
Didn't
know which way he was going.
Picked up the ball and started running to the end zone, except it was the wrong end zone.
That was just bad. This was low football. This was the opposite of the high AWR. This
low
was
awareness.
Low football IQ. Yes.
But it's right up there with Wrong Way Marshall, because how much lower can you get to take the ball and start running?
Oh, yeah, he'll be right,
your
he'll be right there on the
line.
DVD with that Colts fake punt with Garo Yeprimian. You know, with Gus Frerotte concussing himself in the end zone.
Oh.
This is going to be right up there with all
now
of
that's
those.
That's low awareness. And the Around the NFL podcast said Chandler Jones
both
had
the Grammatica
more.
Boys. Both of them. Both Grammaticas.
Yeah. The Chandler Jones on that run back, he had more yards after the catch than any receiver in his actual game. So that's how fucked up that play was. Again.
What an athletic play, though, by Chandler Jones, though. I mean, he went up there, he just snagged it, nice, clean hands catch, and then just turns and immediately just lays the lumber on poor Mac Jones. puts them to sleep.
He knows that there's only one way to the end zone, and that's through Mac Jones. So therefore, Mac, you got to go.
And in a week, think about it. We did not even talk about Dak's pick six to end the game.
Ooh. Well,
in that,
that was
in that,
that
game
was
with that deflection
hand,
off of Noah Brown, but still, you know, Rayshon Jenkins plays the game of his life.
Mm-hmm. Sure did.
But also, let's not sleep on the fact that the Jags put up 40 on that Cowboys defense.
And there's no doubt that the Cowboys took Jacksonville more seriously than the Houston Texans. So they came out trying to put Jacksonville.
They were up
too. Yeah, they put them down in the first half. And then Trevor Lawrence just woke up and said, oh, wait a minute.
It's the Zay Jones show.
I feel much better. Yeah. And the Dak had a bad INT to lead to another touchdown for the Jags in regulation in that game.
Yep.
So Dak is getting some criticism, but he doesn't deserve the game-ending INT criticism because that was a deflection, as we said.
Yeah, he threw that like Noah Brown was kind of sliding to the ground, and it just kind of ricocheted off of his shoulder, and then just great pick by Rayshon Jenkins and to the house.
Not much else that we didn't cover. The Philly run D kept Chicago in the game, as I figured, so that was a cover for the Bears. Neither team was really willing to tackle in that game either.
That was another cold one.
And
but
again,
even with
Rams,
all of that, the Eagles did everything they could to get up 12 and have that taken care of, and then it's a blown pass coverage that gives the Bears the cover. So good for Justin Fields. There's another one that they're wheeling out there injured to – because he's better than the alternative, because they will refuse to play Nathan Peterman.
I don't know why he's on the team. I really don't.
He's insurance against Justin Fields. He's the guarantee that Justin Fields is going to play no matter what.
I see. And again, the Rams D try like hell to keep the team afloat, but no Baker magic this time in Green
Bay.
No
Baker magic. Got my lock.
Of course. Because you are going to win out with your locks, guaranteed. That is the recap of that craziness in Week 15, and now we get to pick a full slate in Week 16.
We get to do it in 40 minutes, so
exactly.
We've got to
be
quick tonight.
Half the games don't deserve more than a minute anyway, so
we'll
get to that in a couple minutes. You are listening live to In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Not on the radio, but only here on the website, blogtalkradio.com/inmuchlessdetail. To be notified when we're live, you can follow the show on the Blog Talk Radio website, or you can follow my Twitter feed at IMLDDre when I tweet out when we're live before every show. Jason is on Twitter too. His feed is at IMLDJTG. Our show is available as a podcast where you get the live show and a special VIP after show. To listen to the show as a podcast, about an hour or so after the live show is over, come back to the show page and look through our archives, or subscribe on iTunes or any number of different podcasting apps, including Player.fm, Mixcloud, Blueberry, and the TuneIn Radio app. You'll get the whole show, the live show and the after show, downloaded straight to you. You can always send us a question or comment or shout out via email to the following email address, inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com. You can follow all of our picks on our blog. The website for the blog is inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. Our Thursday night picks will be available Thursday afternoon on our Twitter feeds. Again, that's at IMLDDre and at IMLDJTG. This copyrighted broadcast is a production of Jay and Me and is solely performed for our entertainment as well as for any poor soul who happens to be listening. It is intended to be a football pick show for the private, non-commercial use of our audience. Any publication, reproduction, retransmission, or any other use of the descriptions and accounts of this podcast without the express written consent of Jay or me is strictly prohibited. Always fun to get the week off to a good start on Thursday night, so we were both able to come through with the Jaguars over Zach Wilson and the Jets on that ugly-ass Thursday night game. That was the underlock of the year, I would guess. But a lot of these games this weekend might also be underlocks. There's only one game that's not a dome Florida or California game in which the projected temperature is higher than like 20 degrees, and that's Dallas,
yeah,
which is a balmy 34.
We had snow yesterday. I did not go to work this morning because they were talking about blizzard conditions today, and I have a long drive through a lot of open areas to my job. When I got up this morning, the wind chill was 44 below.
Dad, don't even know how to respond to that. It's bad here in Memphis, but it's not that bad. But it's as bad as it gets down here, which is 0 degrees this morning when we woke up, which is, you know, just apocalyptic for us down here. I also did not go to work today.
You tell me tomorrow. You tell me that, and then I send you the minus 13 screenshot.
Yeah.
Of what we're dealing with. Yeah, no, it was a rough day, and I have a long drive, and the last thing I needed to do today was be, you know, left sitting on the side of the road because the car died or spun out, or, you know, you can't see and something bad happens because of all the blowing snow and drifting stuff around here. So, yeah, I played cautious did not make the long drive to work today.
I actually had the dates this weekend scheduled off already, but if I didn't, I don't think I would have tried to be a hero today because it basically came where it was 50 degrees yesterday, and
man,
then rain and snow came, and it dropped to zero in like 4 hours. And so that's just ice and snow and all of that completely messing up the roads. There's no time to do anything about that when the temperature drops that fast.
You guys are not equipped to handle that at all.
Not at
like
all.
Here, you know, here it's rare. It's no big deal. But, you know, yeah, there's blizzard warnings all around. When they're talking 50-mile-an-hour wind gusts and sub-zero temperatures, I'm like, no, it's not dying for my job.
Not at all.
So I stayed home with the kids today.
Great choice. The vast majority of you out there are dealing with similar issues and situations in this country. Again, if you're not in Florida or California, it's pretty bad right there. So hopefully wherever you are, you're staying safe and warm. So here are the rest of this long slate of games this weekend. And most of them are happening tomorrow on Christmas Eve, three of them on Christmas Day. So tomorrow, the early afternoon games, Falcons go up to Baltimore, Atlanta 5-9, Baltimore 9-5. A lot of defensive injuries for Baltimore. Calais Campbell, the big man, is out with a knee injury. And Marcus Peters, the cornerback, is out with a calf injury. Devin Duvernay is done for the season. He broke his foot at wide receiver. More Snoop Huntley under center for Baltimore. Lamar Jackson still not ready to come back at quarterback. With all of that, Baltimore still the favorite over your boy Desmond Ridder and the Falcons plus 6.5 at Baltimore.
Yeah. I still think that's too big of a number. Tyler Huntley, I don't know if Tyler Huntley's ever covered a touchdown number. I mean, he's just, you know, talk about people who are a mortal lock to play close games like the Vikings are. That's Tyler Huntley. I think that the Falcons will stay under this number. I think they'll be competitive. Arthur Smith clearly is getting as much as he possibly can from this team. I mean, they're doing it in a lot of different ways. You know, they clearly are just going to run all day long. If it's Algier, if it's Patterson, you know, if it's Ridder a little bit, they're going to run the ball a lot. They're going to shorten the game. I think they'll get just enough offense to keep this under a touchdown. So I will take the Falcons and the points.
They have to run if their quarterback doesn't know which way to throw the football. The Ravens get a playoff spot if they win, and the Patriots and Dolphins all lose. Baltimore actually gets into the playoffs as a wild card. The W's in the bag, as far as I'm concerned, because Desmond Ridder isn't there yet. And it's just a matter of are they going to cover the number. You know, the Baltimore run D is coming through. They're improving. They're trending up. I know Atlanta's coming in running, but Baltimore's coming in ready to stop the run. It's going to be the type of terrible conditions that you know, going to be out there kind of swapping hits and swapping sweat, and it's going to be one of those dirty, grindy, cold blistery games, and I'm not trusting the Dome team in those conditions. That's for damn sure. Roquan Smith doing work for the Ravens. I'm gonna take the Ravens and give the 6.5. They can win by 10. Probably not much more than that. But
first,
but
they
I'll
have
take
to
Baltimore.
Score 10.
They have to score 10 in order to cover 10. This is true. Saints will play the Browns in similar conditions. Very windy and blustery, and probably snow in Cleveland. Saints are 5-9. Browns are 6-8. Saints, I don't know who they're going to be throwing to. Chris Olave is not going to play. He's got a hamstring injury. Jarvis Landry is on IR with an ankle injury for Cleveland. Jadeveon Clowney is out. He is dumplings. The Saints are the dogs in this one, plus the field goal at the Browns.
Yeah, this game smells pushy as all hell, but I actually think in a weird kind of way that you started to see Cleveland each week since Deshaun Watson's come back. They've been a little bit better. Last week, they actually had a fairly decent game against an inept Ravens offense. I don't – you talk about Dome teams going out into the cold and not liking them. No way I like the Saints going into this spot. This is going to be Cleveland running up and down the field all over that Saints defense. They can, once again, probably win this game despite or hiding their quarterback. I'm going to take Cleveland and give the 3.
I concur. Definitely not taking New Orleans in these conditions either. Very faint wild card chances for both teams, but New Orleans, of course, only a game out of the NFC South.
Blah, blah, blah.
Oh, that division. I don't know who the Saints are throwing to. I don't know if Red Rifle could throw it in these conditions. It's going to be pretty bad out there, so just go with I think the over-under is 32. It's like the lowest over-under in many years. So
yeah, and this will go under.
It might go under. Usually in those situations, there becomes some weird, like, touchdown, defensive touchdown on a fumble or something, a slick ball situation. So be careful with that under, just because that number is so low. But I will concur and take Cleveland and give the 3.
No, this has got, like, serious 13-6 vibes to it.
Very well me. Seahawks and Kansas City, not going to be quite as snowy and windy, but it's still going to be cold and some wind out there. For Geno Smith and the Seahawks, they are 7-7 going into Pat Mahomes and the 11-3 Chiefs. Both teams will be missing wide receivers. Mecole Hardman still not back from his ab injury for the Chiefs. And, of course, the Seahawks are going to have to do it without Tyler Lockett, who busted his finger. Seahawks are the big dogs in this one, plus 10 at the Chiefs.
That's a big number, but I am a man of my word, and I said that I was hard fading the Seahawks, and I meant it. I'm taking KC squish.
Certainly understand why, but it's the Chiefs. I don't know how you can really trust them right now the way they're playing. You got to be careful. Anytime the Chiefs with a big number, biggest spread of the week, we've talked about big numbers all year, just not been the favorites year. It's been a lot of dogs, a lot of barking dogs out there. And also, specifically to this matchup, Seahawks pass defense has really rallied up from that terrible start they had early in the year. They are a much, much improved unit. That's actually the best unit right now of the defense, because the run game has been suffering, and the Chiefs probably run for a lot more than one might think in this one. But I don't know about the passing attack. So that and the bitter cold should tamp down the KC aerial show. I'm actually going to take the Seahawks and the 10 points in this one. Giants and Minnesota, don't have to worry about weather here. They're in the dome. Giants 8-5-1, Vikings 11-3. But these two teams are doing the Spider-Man meme, because they are both lucky as fuck. Both
it's the fraud. It's the fraud bowl.
It's the fraud bowl. They are the fraud bowl off these two teams. I don't know who's going to come out on this. Both of them. Both of them. How do you trust either one? Giants 4-2 on the road, Vikings 7-1 at home. Giants are the underdogs plus 4 at the Vikings.
I'll tell you what, you do not have anywhere to go down after what the Vikings just did last week. The come down from that is enough for me to say that the Giants are going to cover this number and possibly even win this game.
I'm going to concur. But again, how do you trust either one? Giants are minus 25. They're 8-5-1. They're minus 25 on the year.
God.
Terrible. And the Vikings 11-3 and plus two. How?
Plus two.
How do you do that?
Plus two.
With those records. Never seen anything like it. Giants clinch a wild card with the win and a 2 out of 3 loss between the three teams, Washington, Detroit, and Seattle. So they're going to be fighting. Vikings have clinched the division with whatever that was last weekend. So maybe they don't have quite as much fight. I don't know. How the hell do you trust either of these two? Field goal game. So I'll concur and take the 4 points.
That's my vibe on this game completely, is that this is going to be a 3-point game.
Back to terrible elements. Buffalo visits Chicago. Buffalo used to terrible elements. Buffalo played last week in terrible elements and came out on top, even though they didn't cover and cost me money. Again, betting on my locks, which I will not be doing this week. But Buffalo 11-3, Chicago 3-11. Bitter, cold, gusty, terrible conditions at Soldier Field. Bears will not have Chase Claypool again with a knee injury. They've got offensive line issues as well. The Bills, the big favorite on the road in this one, minus 8 at Chicago.
You know, these types of conditions, normally if this was Bears and Bills in good conditions, I don't think I'd touch this game for the Bears side. But this game, I've got under feelings coming from this game, which means if you're thinking this is going under, I'm taking the points, because at this point I got to go with the team that's got the better running game. And as long as you've got Justin Fields, you've got the better running game. Plus the Bills have the number 26 graded rush defense, your favorite plays PFF. They can be had on the ground. I think the Bears can shorten the game and keep this under 8.
They can be had. As we know what Chicago's going to come in and do. They're going to run. They're not going to throw. They're still number one running and dead last throwing. I suspect that's going to be where they finish for this season, especially without Claypool. I don't know who Justin Fields would be trying to throw to. Buffalo looks to clinch the division in this one, another bad weather game, so they will be motivated. Can Fields keep the Bears in another one all by himself? It feels like he's out there like doing everything. He's trying to throw. He's trying to run, trying to throw to himself. It's a lot. He's been covering some spreads doing that. This is a little too much. I'm going to take Buffalo and give the 8 points. I don't think they're going to like beat them by 2 or 3 scores in those conditions. But I don't think the Bears can stay within a score of the Bills. The Bills actually have a little motivation, so I'll take Buffalo and give the 8. Houston and Tennessee, I still don't know what to make of the Houston Texans. They're still the worst record by a mile, 1-12-1, but they have found a way to compete the last few games. And, of course, the Titans, 7-7, and if they were a stock, the red arrow would be pointing down. They have been falling precipitously. And, of course, they have to go with Malik Willis as QB1. What you talking about, Willis? Is the starting quarterback Ryan Tannehill out with that ankle injury, and some reports say he may not be coming back this season. Willis, the good news, he'll get Treylon Burks back, who finally woke up from his nap in Philadelphia and has been cleared through concussion protocol. But the bad news is you're Malik Willis. You can't get him the ball anyway, so what difference does it make? For the Texans, they should get Brandon Cooks back, their wide receiver with a calf injury, but they put Nico Collins on IR with a foot injury. In this one, the Texans are only a cop-out line 3-point dog in Nashville at the Titans.
The Texans are a 3-point dog, right? I wasn't sure if you said. It's late. I'm all messed up. I thought you said the Titans were, but then everybody's like, no, you said the Texans were. It doesn't matter. I am going to now officially call them dead and buried. I'll tell you what, the Houston Texans are dead and buried, because I have them to win this game, and it's my lock of the week.
Sorry, Houston. Jay just locked you. You know what? No, they're not dead and buried. You're running it out on locks. You're running the table. The Houston Texans are going to go into Nashville and take out the Titans now, because you are running the table on locks of the week. You are going to leave the sheet, as we say in bowling. And you're also going to do it, because I'm going to go on the other side and take the Titans and give the 3. this is, if there's ever going to be a game for the Titans to wake up and figure it out, this is the Houston Texans. This is Derrick Henry. You are their daddy. Derrick Henry owns the Texans. He can't stop running for 200 yards on the Houston Texans. It's just, it's muscle memory. He doesn't even try anymore to run for 200 on the Texans. It's just what he does. So if it's ever going to turn around for the Titans, it's got to be in this game tomorrow against the Texans. They have to stay ahead of Jacksonville because the Jags already started out the week with a victory. They're one up on the Jags, or they were one up. Now they're a half game. No, they were two up actually at the start of the week. So now they're one and a half up. So they don't want to keep losing and wind up falling behind. Did I get the Jags record messed up?
No, Jags are at 7 now.
Yeah, I had it messed up. I had them at 5-8 to start the week, and they're actually 6-8.
Titans are a half a game up on the Jags.
And now they're 7-8 with that win. So, yeah, right. Yeah, the Titans have to keep winning to stay ahead of the Jags. I'm gonna take the Titans and give the 3. I can't believe they're only a 3-point favorite, but that's how bad the Titans have been playing lately, and they got Malik Willis. But I think they know what they got to do, especially with Malik Willis as the quarterback. They know what they got to do. They got to just run, and bury the Texans. Yep. So
I've got Derrick Henry in my DFS lineup tomorrow.
And as everybody should. Bengals visit the Patriots up in Foxborough. And that will also be chilly conditions and bitter cold. Bengals are 10-4 after all their struggles this year. Patriots are 7-7 and still battling for a playoff spot. Trey Hendrickson will return, the edge rusher for the Bengals, despite his broken wrist. He's going to club it up and give it a go. But they will not have their tight end Hunter Hurst again with a calf injury. For the Patriots, Devontae Parker is still staggering around. He's still dumplings. He's not going to play. The cornerback Jalen Mills is not going to play with a groin injury, but Damian Harris may return to the field at running back from his thigh injury. With that, the Bengals are the favorite on the road, -3 at the Patriots.
I think that the Bengals are in tune-up mode right now. They look locked in. They're, 6 in a row they've won now. They're going to make it 7. I don't think the Patriots are going to be able to hang with them. I'm going to take Cincinnati to win the game. I'm just going to take the team that's better.
Oh, he did it again.
That's what I was going to say about the Bengals now when they play people. It seems to work.
Take the better team. That's it. Hey, can't blame you there. Since he goes from Tommy up to New England, he's going from Brady to the Patriots. The Brady and the Patriots, much better when they were together. Not so much now that they're separated. New England fighting for a wild card spot since he's already in. Can New England's defense come through for them? They've been trying to hold this team up as Mac Jones tries to have his identity crisis and figure out who he wants to be. I'm not going to go with the Patriots here. I'm also going to go with a better team and the team that's more rounded out and in shape and doing what they're supposed to do as the postseason approaches. The Bengals get ready to make maybe another surprising postseason run, but they are certainly seem to be rounding into form. And I don't think they're going to be down 17 to Mac Jones like they were to Tampa. Detroit and Carolina in Charlotte. Lions 7-7 and Panthers 5-9. And despite those records, both teams are still fighting for playoff spots because of that awful NFC South.
Just crazy.
Unbelievable. Detroit 3-3 on the road, Carolina 4-4 at home, so something's got to give there. Lions are the favorites on the road, -2.5 at the Panthers.
Yeah, the Lions favorites lately, huh? This used to be
the
auto fade. This just used to be the what? Lions are a favorite? No, I'm not going to touch this one. This is the. No idea why I have this one, but I've actually got the Panthers to win this game. I've got this. This feels like a kind of a trap game for Detroit. They're riding high, but they're riding high. But sometimes these teams that are on their way up kind of have that stumble when they shouldn't. And this feels like that kind of spot where, oh yeah, hey, we're road favorites. We're starting to feel it. We just went and beat the Jets and Carolina. They play some pretty good defense as well. They also run the football very efficiently, which Detroit does not do a good job of handling, although they've been better lately. They're still pretty bad stopping the run. I'm actually going to take Carolina to kind of spring the trap here on the Lions.
The Panthers have certainly been a surprise, and they seem to always have an effort ready for you under Steve Wilks ever since everything that happened went down, ever since the best player got traded and the coach got fired and everything went to hell. The Panthers have been a tough draw. But the Lions, man, they are yep. – there's something special going on there. I don't know exactly what. I can't go Darnold over Goff the way they're playing right now. That's kind of what that breaks down to. Is that just there's no way I'm taking Sam Darnold over Jared Goff. The run games might play to a draw because they're both running pretty efficiently. But when it comes down to quarterback play, no, I got to go with the Lions in this one over the Panthers. Late afternoon action tomorrow. There's only two matchups in the late afternoon. The Commanders visit the 49ers. Washington at 7-6-1. San Francisco at 10-4. In this one, finally, Chase Young appears to have arisen from his slumber and will be activated and will play. At least the rumor is that he's going to be activated and playing tomorrow, finally coming back from his ACL injury for Washington. As far as the Niners go, Debo is still down with his leg injury, but it's okay because they got Super Purdy and he covers all ills. So everything will work out just fine for the 49ers, of course. 6-1 at home, Washington 4-2-1 on the road. Commanders are the underdogs plus 6.5 at the Niners.
He covers all that, and he's going to cover the spread. San Francisco feels very much like Cincinnati. They're the Cincinnati of the NFC. They've won 7 in a row. I think they're in tune-up mode right now. Washington, yes, Washington's fighting for a playoff spot. I'm sure they're going to have some, you know, little grit and determination and fight in them. Man, San Francisco is another class compared to Washington. They're going to come at them. They're going to handle them pretty easy. I don't think Washington can just score enough points to stay under this number. So I'm going to take San Fran. Squish.
Yeah, you know how I feel about San Francisco and Kyle Shanahan, and now everything is set up for anyone could step in a quarterback. I still think you could step in and have a good outing or two or three for the 49ers and make yourself a little money. You wouldn't have to go drive into the blizzard anymore. You'd be set up for a long time. But this one, I got a feeling. I think Chico Rivera's defense might get a little dirty and grind this up a little bit with some pressure. And Brock Purdy should see some heat, probably the likes of which he hadn't seen in his other games that he's played. So it's hard to not assume that Kyle Shanahan will scheme around whatever Washington has in mind, but yeah, just to cover the number, not necessarily to win, I'm going to take the potato skins and take the 6.5 points. I think they'll dirty it up enough to keep it close. We all know how I felt about this game, so I'm going to let Jay handle everything to say about it. Philadelphia and Dallas, I've been telegraphing my pick on this.
It's your lock of the week.
And it's before Jalen Hurts even got hurt.
It's your lock of the week. You can just do it. Come on. There you go.
Gardner Minshew and the 13-1 Eagles are plus 4.5 at Dak and the 10-4 Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, so now the Cowboys get to get revenge on the Eagles for the Cooper Rush game, right?
Uh-huh.
And now they get to play the Eagles backup. Problem is, the Eagles are still really good. And I think the Eagles are still going to win this game. So I'm going to take the Eagles and crap all over your lock. I don't think it's going to be – yes, it's a drop from Hurts to Minshew, but I think that the Eagles are going to still have enough offensively. That offensive line, I think, is going to negate some of that Cowboys pass rush. That's the best offensive line in football. They're going to be able to get things done. If you cannot get to Minshew, and if he has time back there, that you know, the Cowboys can get carved up. We've seen that. And I think that Philly offensive line is going to have something – for the Cowboys, and Eagles are going to sew this thing up.
Okay. Cowboys do indeed need to beat the Eagles and make a run in order to make a last-minute run at the NFC East, and the Eagles have to keep losing after they lose tomorrow, if that does happen. As I referenced and have been referencing, week six, Sunday night, Eagles 26-17 over the Cowboys. Cooper Rush, the starting quarterback for the Cowboys, 18 of 38 for 181 with a touchdown and three INTs. Dak ain't doing that. Dak is absolutely not doing that. I still feel the same that the Cowboys are going to kill the Eagles and get revenge for that game. I felt that way even before the Jalen Hurts injury. What I'll say is that apparently just going by this free contest, this free handicapping contest that I get the spreads from, apparently they all agree with you. The contest allows me to look at the spread, what it is right now, even if I pick the games at any other time during the week. When the news came out about Jalen Hurts potentially missing the game, he hadn't been officially ruled out yet, but all indications were that he wasn't going to be able to play with his shoulder injury. I went in and clicked on the Cowboys and locked that pick in because this was like Tuesday, I think, because I assumed that once it became official, then the Cowboys would be even more of a favorite. At that time that I locked it in, it was Dallas -6. I was absolutely shocked to go to the spreads today and see that it's actually down to Dallas -4.5 now that the news is official that it's going to be Gardner Minshew. I'm not quite sure what that means, except that people think that it's too big of a spread for the Cowboys over such a good team in the Philadelphia Eagles. And even though it's going to be officially Minshew now, they think it's good. It's good enough. The Minshew is good enough to keep the Cowboys close, and the money or whatever the fake points in this contest is going on Philadelphia. So they agree with you. They think the Eagles are much the better team and good enough to stay close to Dallas, if not win the game. So you should feel good about that, I suppose. But I thought this was going to go up to 7 or 8 once it became official. I really did. So we'll see how it all shakes out.
Sometimes you get these games, especially these heated division games, though, where you get that injured quarterback or you get that big injury, and the Eagles defense, you can't sleep on them either. They might have one of those games. They might step up.
They might. I just feel very strongly. Everyone knows I felt very strongly for 2 months with the Cowboys.
You locked this up 3 months ago.
So I'm not backing off of it now. On Saturday night, the Las Vegas Raiders are going to visit the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the telecast and everything around it is going to be all about the Immaculate Reception and the 50th anniversary. And one small problem with that is old Franco Harris is not going to be there. This was such a shocking death. Like that day, apparently he was walking around and shaking hands and doing interviews with people and talking about the Immaculate Reception, and everything seemed perfectly fine, and he dropped dead Tuesday night. So very stunning. I know I made fun of it because I don't really respect Franco Harris, but I'm sure it was a very, very disappointing, devastating loss for the Steeler Nation there. And now our question for our purposes is, how do we think it's going to affect the actual game? Will it affect the game? Will the Steelers come out and play for Franco, or will they be deflected and dejected and distracted and all of that? So see how we feel on this one. Both teams are 6-8. Vegas is going to be the very small 2-point underdog at the Pittsburgh Steelers, who are going to get Kenny Smallhands back as their quarterback.
Okay. Not a very good game. Is there an effect from this Franco Harris thing on the actual on-the-field product? If there is, it's negligible. I really don't think it's going to make a difference. I mean, it's not like the Raiders are going to want revenge on the Steelers for what happened 50 years ago, or the Steelers are going to step up for their fallen hero. I'm going to take the Raiders because, again, when the guy dies a few days before, you got to spoil the party too. So the Raiders are going to just come in because this is a very Raiders-like thing to do. Just go in there and spoil the party. Just make it a miserable week all around.
Just piss all over the field and piss on a logo. Yeah, that would be a Raiders thing. Yeah. No, I thought what you're going to say is, after all that, I'm just going to take the Raiders because they're just the better team.
No. I only use that with the Bengals.
Oh, okay.
But the Raiders are the better team. by a little
bit. They've got the same records. I don't know. They got the better talent, that's for damn sure. But
yes, they should. On paper, they should win this game.
In Madden, they are definitely the better team. Will Franco reach down and guide the Steelers? I'm just throwing those things out there because that's what the narrative is going to be.
Oh, God.
Know,
especially if this is it's going to be on NBC, too, which is the most overproduced crap.
At least Al Michaels won't be doing it, so at least there's that. They won't lateral a win right to Vegas. We know that. They're not going to pull a Jacoby Myers. But I'm not taking Kenny Smallhands in single-digit windy weather over Derek Carr and Davante Adams. I am taking the Raiders because they are the better team on paper and on the field. And so I will concur with you there. And also because it will spoil the party in Pittsburgh, which would make me laugh. On actual Christmas Day, there are three games. There are no weather concerns for actual Christmas Day. With all those miserable-ass games tomorrow on Christmas, there's one game in Miami, and then there's two dome games. So at least there's that. On Christmas, in the early afternoon, the Packers go to Miami to get out of the wind and snow and actually go down to South Beach. So I'm sure they'll enjoy that. Green Bay 6-8, they're trying to make their run to 9-8, and Miami at 8-6, and they're trying to hang on for their playoff lives. Packers in this one are the dogs plus 3.5 at Tua and the Dolphins.
I know your pick on this one too, because you are going to try. You're trying to will the Packers to their 9-8 record. So since you're trying to will that into existence, unfortunately, I think this is where it all comes crashing down for you in the narrative. I think Miami is just – they are the better team, but they're just too loaded, and they're in rhythm. And, you know, and Aaron Rodgers, he's still having these moments where he just doesn't – even against the Rams, where he's throwing the ball, and he knows where he's throwing the ball, but his receivers don't know where they're supposed to be. And you're still seeing it happen way too much. You can get away with that against the Rams. You're not going to get away with that against – Waddle and Hill, Tua, and that two-headed running attack. No, Miami's just way too loaded offensively in their building. I think they run them out of the building here. I think this kind of unceremoniously ends the Packers season. So I'm going to take Miami. Squish.
I'm certainly worried because Green Bay's defensive backs have not been as impressive as expected this year, and Waddle and Hill could absolutely lay waste to the Packers and embarrass them out there. And Tua may have figured it out. He may have figured out how to adjust to tight middle coverage, and he sure looked like he figured it out in Buffalo. Again, the Dolphins were leading. They could have very easily won that game straight up. So are they going to take it back down to Miami and hold off the Packers at home? They might. You could say they probably will, but I'm still sticking with my narrative. I'll go Aaron over Tua in a fun one, in a back and forth. I like the over in this one, and I'll take the Packers to come out on top. They're desperate, man. 9-8. They gotta do it. They gotta feel it. So I'm gonna go with the Pack. And in the late afternoon on Christmas Day, in the game that everybody can skip, nobody has to watch this, the Denver Broncos and the Los Angeles Rams, the only battle all weekend between teams that are officially mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. So there's no reason to watch this unless you're just a huge football fan or you're a degenerate gambler. They're both 4-10. They're both terrible. Russ is ready to ride. So that's what the Broncos have going for him. He's ready to come back and play quarterback for the Broncos. The Rams keep subtracting people. No reason to play Aaron Donald this year. He's not going to play, and he's probably not going to play again this season. There's no reason to do that. So it's going to be Russ versus Baker. And the Broncos are actually the road favorite in this one, -3 at the Rams.
That's just crazy that we're at this point, that the Broncos, as bad as they have been, as poorly coached, are 3-point favorites at the world champs.
Well, so do you?
They're playing the Pete Myers Bulls at this point. I mean, this is what the Rams have become. This is one of the worst championship defenses I have ever seen, and I'm still taking the Rams to win this game.
Pete Myers Bulls, for those who aren't familiar.
Is that a deep cut?
It is. I feel like I have to explain it because not everybody remembers. I mean, this is going back. This is when did Jordan retire?
98, 99. When he left the Bulls? Was their last title?
So this is when I'm thinking 98 or something like that.
98,
was
the last
title.
Because they won three, took two off, and then won three more. So that would have been, that would be 97, 98, right around there.
So the 1999 Chicago Bulls, who were technically defending world champions, but running Pete Myers out there as their shooting guard because that 23 guy Jordan had retired. So therefore, you're the champs. You got to run a team out there. So they're running guys like Pete Myers and Rusty LaRue and guys like that out there in their starting lineup. And it's like, that's not the world champions. But they were technically the defending champions. So that is a deep cut. That's very good. I was wondering, what do you think Brett Rypien at quarterback? I don't know. Russ is so bad, but do you think Denver's still favored with Brett Rypien? Because I don't know. I don't think so. There's enough Baker love probably. I think if Brett Rypien was a quarterback, it's probably a push or a pick 'em. I don't know, but Denver's the favorite. Russ is there. Both teams eliminated, so it was truly an insignificant game. Baker's beginner's luck ran out last Monday in Green Bay. Two prideful defenses still trying. I'm going to ride with Russ. I'm going to give the three. I think he was starting to play a little better, having that connection I almost said Romeo Doubs. That's not right. The receiver up there whose name is escaping me at the moment because it's late and I'm tired.
Judy?
Jerry Judy. Yeah, that's the guy who will hopefully lead me to victory in my fantasy playoff game.
Oh, well, so good for you.
You think I'd remember his name? I'm in the fantasy playoffs, but I can't even remember my guy's name. That's how old I am, folks. That's what 47 feels like, if you're wondering. It's can't even remember your guys' names, and you're in the fantasy playoffs. So I'm going to take Denver and give the three. On Christmas night, the Buccaneers visit the Cardinals. Bucks still have their defensive injury issues. Vita Vea, Carl Nassib, Jamel Dean are all out again. But they're facing Arizona with Trace McSorley as the starting quarterback now that Colt McCoy is dumplings. So with that, the Buccaneers at 6-8 are the 7.5-point favorite at the 4-10 Cardinals.
What a huge number for as bad as you have been. But that's more of a testament. I think that's more of an anti-Arizona number because as bad as Tampa is, the Cardinals, they're just giving it up to everybody right now. This isn't even Colt McCoy. It's Trace McSorley. If Tommy cannot go out to the desert and obliterate the Arizona Cardinals and Trace McSorley and Baby Terminator and zero defense, but just back up the trucks for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. This has got to be a get-right spot for them after that meltdown last week against the Bengals. So I'm going to begrudgingly take Tampa and give the points. I don't like it one
bit. That outfit still being a division champ is just sickening. It's disgusting. The Cliff Kingsbury Wormers have started. It looks like it's about over in Arizona for them. This isn't going to help if he loses to this messed up squad. But as messed up as Tampa is, they're not losing to Trace McSorley. So I'm going to concur and take Tampa and give the 7.5. And on Monday night, another dome game. So all the bad weather is tomorrow. Clippers and Colts, Los Angeles 8-6, 84-9-1. Derwin James looks to return from his quad injury for the Clippers. Indy's got injury issues. Jonathan Taylor's done. His ankle is busted. Nick Foles getting the start, as we discussed, over Matty Ice. Clippers are the favorite, -4 at the Colts.
Yeah. You talk about the come down for the Vikings. Well, this would be the comeback for the Colts. I think their coach is actually still in Minnesota. Man, how great. Yeah, no. Justin Herbert's going to light these guys up. Give me the Clipper Chargers.
Certainly understand why you would go that way. It was not Matty Ice's fault. I don't understand putting Nick Foles in as the answer. But I think the Colts can stay close because that Clippers run D continues to be ass. Continues. Even without Jonathan Taylor, I think the Colts will stay in it just because of the run game. I know the Clippers clinched a wild card with a win, and if Vegas and New England lose, so they'll be motivated. But I'm going to take the Colts to cover the 4.
The Colts will have it covered at the end of the third quarter and then give up 30 points in the fourth quarter.
Oh, dear. That may be what happens. More on our after show when we come back. Into our VIP after show program. There's almost expectations for this week, I think, off of all the craziness from last week. It can't possibly be that crazy again. But
no.
There's all that weather. There's all this possible snow. There's all these ice conditions. Stuff happens in those conditions. So it may be some more Benny Hill next week. I may have to go pull some more
I think that actually makes it look a little bit more like, you know, old school football. I don't think you're going to have teams coming back in, coming back from 3 touchdown deficits in sub-zero weather. You're also not going to probably have that many teams get up by 3 touchdowns in sub-zero weather.
Right. Is that what Justin Jefferson said? All we need is 5 touchdowns. No, it's Patrick Peterson, I think. Get us 5 touchdowns and we got your back. And so I catch
you for the year and you lose your shit and you just decide we got to disagree on every game? Is that what's going on?
Again, we make our picks independently. I have no idea what you were picking coming in.
We did have a lot of
disagreements. You think it's that many?
Yeah, it's a lot.
7. Aha! I think you're wrong. I think it was 10.
Oh, my God. 10 out of 15.
That's a lot.
That is a lot.
Yeah. It's easier to count the ones we agree on. We agree on Cleveland. We agree on the Giants.
Yep.
We agree on the Bengals. We agree on the Raiders.
We agree on the Bucks.
Being the turd in the punch bowl in Pittsburgh, and we agree on the Bucks, and we disagree on everything else.
Wow.
Including
we'll go
sitting on
five.
Each other's lock.
Yeah.
About
we'll go 5-5.
And we'll both win our locks?
And we'll both win our locks, yeah.
You know. You have to win your lock because you're running the table.
It doesn't matter. But it's just fun at this point. But I'm ending the Texans run here. That's why I locked them up this week.
You stopping that shit right now?
No, I just something's in the water for the Titans. They got they've actually it looked like they were running away with that division. Now they got a team breathing down their necks. They got the backup quarterback who's just god awful. Ugh. I know they beat them 17-10 last time with Willis, but Houston's been competitive at least. If that kid makes some awful throws and some bad mistakes, or if Henry gets stripped, it's going to be cold in Tennessee. Not like normal Tennessee weather. It's going to be a weird game, I think. So,
I didn't even reference that game.
Wouldn't be shocked if Houston goes in there and spoils it for them, and then just throws that whole division into disarray.
Willis did have to make the start for the Titans in Houston in Week 8. And it was so ineffective that they wound up having him throw one time in the second half. One pass in the second half.
17-10, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I figure they should do about the same thing. And, just rely on Derrick Henry to own the Texans, which he does. He absolutely owns them.
I was going to pat myself on the back and give my best of the week to my my DFS winnings last week.
Ah.
My $3.50 investment that won me $75. I was very proud of that. That's my best outing so far.
I'm jealous. I wish I could do that.
Finished 394th in my one lineup. Finished 394th out of 360,000.
Nice.
So
very nice.
I was Pretty impressed with that. Of course, I had a lineup of complete studs and then one guy who just completely didn't show up.
Right.
Well, that's how it always goes, right?
394 and 1.
Yeah, but I don't. Did I send you my team?
You might have.
Man. Well, I'll tell you this team, though. You just want to hear, like, this is how lucky you can get with fantasy football. Because there's no – nobody should have this combination. But I'll tell you who did well. Jalen Hurts was my quarterback.
Yeah.
Something about Eagles quarterbacks playing Hurt getting me fantasy relevance. You would know all about that. Derrick Henry was the man. Mm-hmm. Devontae Smith with Jalen Hurts was the man.
Yeah.
Zay Jones was the man.
Oh, my God.
Drake London even had 13 points. He was the only guy on Atlanta's offense who was getting balls thrown at him, which was nice. Juwan Johnson was the man.
Touchdown machine.
Latavius Murray was the man. And the Broncos defense did well. And then Miles Sanders had 2.9. So I had stud, just all up and down the lineup. And then Miles Sanders gets me 2.9 points.
That's how it goes.
Man, he was the Amari Cooper of my my that lineup I had with Geno Smith early in the season, the one that won me the $20. But no, I actually had a $3 lineup with this lineup that won me $50. And then one of their free ones, I put this lineup in the free contest, and that won $25 for free.
Can't beat that.
So, yeah, $75 actually got me back to pretty much whole for the season. So I'm still basically flat for the year from where I started with DraftKings. So I'm having fun doing it, and it hasn't cost me anything yet.
That's great.
So,
yeah, I'm in the same boat. I keep winning and losing and going up and down and you know, not giving them any extra money. But still staying competitive. And then they have those free contests as well, so I can always play
those. I'm in the free. I actually have a Gardner Minshew lineup.
Oh, wow.
Because he's only 4,800.
Right.
So having Gardner Minshew in my lineup allowed me to just load up, like, everybody else. I've got, like, Justin Jefferson, Derrick Henry. You know, it's just like
sure.
What happens when you can play a $4,800 quarterback?
Somebody might win with Malik Willis as their quarterback. He might decide to go
off. No, because I remember trying that with Ellinger.
Oh.
That didn't go well. No. I had another, like a 50-cent lineup last week. Desmond Ridder. No, that didn't go well either.
Yeah.
Because he's so cheap.
Sure. Some of them are going to work out, and most of them are not going to. But
yeah, I think I've got two lineups. I know one of them's Minshew. I forget who the other one is. It might just be Mahomes or something like, you know, so it's like I just played, just went chalk. Like
right.
That's, you know, probably one of the better weather games, even though it's going to be cold in Kansas City. It's not supposed to be this brutal, like, you know, 70 mile an hour winds or whatever, like this Cleveland game, this Bears game. That's why, and one of the reasons I took the Bears was I keep getting flashbacks to how headstrong the Bills are in bad weather. You know, because they're so bad at running the football that they're just going to keep throwing. And if it's that windy and it's that nasty, we saw that happen with them when they did that with the Patriots. The Patriots ran the ball, you know, threw the ball three times.
Yeah, I think they've adjusted. They know that Project will just run over people. They adjusted now. They know that they can't rely on Devin Singletary to carry the mail in those bad conditions. So now they just transition to have Project run a bunch of read options, and he'll just keep it and run over your ass.
Yeah, and they've been mixing in James Cook a lot more, the rookie. He's been relevant in their passing attack and their rushing attack too. No, I'm setting the number on that game right now at 200. If I gave you 200 as the over under for rushing yards from quarterbacks in that game tomorrow, what would you take? And I set the number at 200.
That's a lot. I would go under, but not by much.
But yeah, I could see it going over. I could see one of those guys running easily for a $130, $140, and the other one putting up 80 or 90.
Mm-hmm. It wouldn't surprise me.
Since the Bears have become more, at least fantasy relevant, the Bears lead the league in designed quarterback runs, which is, I believe, something that they did not have with Matt Nagy. That was designed quarterback sacks.
Designed quarterback failures. Matt Nagy led the league in that.
So somebody's figured this out with Matt Eberflus or whoever's calling that Bears offense, but they clearly know where the bread is buttered in that offense, and they're trying to basically play they're playing off Fields like he's Lamar, and it's working.
Absolutely. Luke Getsy, my guy.
Luke Getsy.
as
Lamar,
a Bears fan, I'm just...
get Justin killed on three. Break.
I'm just happy to sign somebody that actually uses Justin Fields' talents. Like, this is why you drafted the guy. Use him like that. Come on. And that's what
no,
Getsy is doing.
For what some of these runners that we've seen, if they can, you know, improve that offense, I'd be shocked if the Bears aren't just drafting offensive line or stud wide. This is the problem with Justin Fields, like I think you have with Lamar Jackson. I don't think you have to get him stud receivers.
Let's get him guys that can catch the ball.
Well, yeah, you got to. It's like, you know, Lamar's got Mark Andrews, right? Which makes sense. He's big, easy target for when Lamar breaks contain, and Justin Fields doesn't quite have one of those guys yet. He needs one of those types. He doesn't need a guy who's going to go speed burn down the field for a 70-yard touchdown. That's not their offense. Justin Fields is the guy who's going to do that. That touchdown run he had against the Packers was insane. Nobody touched him. Did I lose you? Is the show over? I think we got sniped. Have a good Christmas, everybody. I don't know if I'm still on the air, but I'm out. Peace.